You're listening to the Politics in Action Report at CJMQ with Emily. Here's this segment's political topics. First, we have federal and provincial investments to job generation in the Sherbrooke region. Doug Ford has been sworn in as Ontario's premier, along with his appointed cabinet ministers. As well, I will be discussing a portion of Canada's boreal forests, now classified as a World Heritage Site. And lastly, Canada Day celebrations with a side of American tariffs. To begin, I will be talking about how governmental investments is generating job growth in the Sherbrooke region. At the end of June, Minister of Innovation, Science, and Economic Development, Navdeep Bains, announced a federal investment of $21.1 million for a company, Tekna Plasma Systems Inc., for advanced manufacturing. The Quebec provincial government has also announced investments into this project, an estimated $9.4 million. Tekna is a company that devotes its time to developing plasma solutions for prospective customers. So it is safe to say this company is about chemical manufacturing, specifically metallic powders. The investment is specifically designated to augment the company's manufacturing capacity, which would mean hiring more employees to match the increased production. These investments are estimated to generate 170 jobs in the region. Sherbrooke is already quite the industrial city. What I mean is that it has a large industrial center for jobs, and adding to this does make accessibility to employment all the more easier in the region. Sherbrooke is probably the location within the eastern townships that offers the most job opportunities, alongside the city of Granby. In the majority of the smaller communities, the job opportunities are relative to the manufacturing sector. For instance, Lac-Brome's main employer is the Knowlton Development Corporation. And sometimes people will commute to these regions for the purposes of these industries and to have access to employment. With Sherbrooke offering more job opportunities, it is definitely going to contribute to the growth of the city, and people will generally stay within the Sherbrooke region for this reason. This also means that the city of Sherbrooke is ensured that 170 additional jobs can be provided to its inhabitants. Some questions that might arise with this whole ordeal is, why Sherbrooke, and what does this mean for the federal government? As you may already realize, one of the objectives of the Liberal government was to strengthen the middle class, and this is one of the ways of realizing this goal. This is so because the Liberal Party of Canada has made a pledge to invest $500 million annually in provincial territorial labor market development agreements. And what it often comes down to when strengthening the middle class is you have to make various investments, whether it's to job creation programs or to companies. So strengthening the middle class does not simply happen at the snap of the Prime Minister's finger. It takes a lot of investments. And this is especially beneficial achieving this goal in a Liberal riding so as to potentially secure the riding come the next federal election. On Friday, June 29th, Premier-elect Doug Ford, along with his 20 cabinet ministers, were sworn in the offices of Ontario's Lieutenant General, Elizabeth Dalzell, thus initiating the start of a four-year term under Ontario's Progressive Conservatives. This is definitely a diverse and memorable turn for the province of Ontario, having been under Liberal rule for 15 years. Setting out as Premier, Ford aspires to govern all Ontarians, despite ideological differences. Ford's cabinet composition consists of 14 men and 7 women. Some have suggested that Ford has differentiated himself in making his cabinet selections. Part of the reason for this is due to the fact that he has appointed members of the private sector, including Andrea Lowler, a political science professor at the Western University's King's University College. Ford clarifies his cabinet selections by stating they are people who come from the business world, people who perhaps understand the bottom line. I can see how a political science professor might have the knowledge to be in office. However, public administration is not exactly synonymous with political science. So this is definitely an interesting appointment. And from what we can see, Ford is going out of his way to ensure his cabinet has a business component. Among the most recognizable cabinet ministers include Christine Elliott, who ran opposition to Ford in the PC leadership race. She was appointed to the positions as Deputy Premier and Minister of Health and Long-Term Care. As well, another running candidate and daughter of a former Prime Minister, Carolyn Mulroney, has been appointed as Ontario's new Attorney General, as well as Minister of Francophone Affairs. So after all the campaigning for the leadership, these running candidates did score some victories after all. Even if they did not score the leadership, they did find some success in their newly appointed positions. And among the most memorable Conservative candidates, they will represent women well in the province. So what can we expect Doug Ford to accomplish as a newly elected premier? Pretty well everything done in the last 15 years will be undone. For instance, the Liberals' carbon tax is being dismantled by the premier as we speak. This is typical of any new administration, because for obvious reasons, ideological differences on issues means parties will have varying stances on policies like climate change and tax reform. Already we can see Ford is wasting no time to demonstrate to Ontarians that he is well worth their votes and is making efforts to fulfill all his campaign promises. So time will tell what unexpected bumps in the road or how the performance of Ford will play out. As time goes on, you can expect not only myself as a Canadian, but Ontarians looking on and watching Ford's every move, critiquing his mishaps and discussing his policy initiatives. With whatever goes down, you can expect me to provide an update and coverage on the performance of Ontario's new premier. A portion of Canada's boreal forest that extends between the provinces of Ontario and Manitoba, approximately 29,000 square kilometers to be exact, has received international recognition as a World Heritage Site. What this means is that the land is to be preserved in its natural form without any deconstruction. Canada has 19 World Heritage Sites, as a matter of fact, among which include the Dinosaur Provincial Park in Alberta and Gros Morne National Park in Newfoundland. The land in discussion is known as, excuse my pronunciation, Pimachuin Ikai, which translates as the land that gives life. Part of what makes Canada beautiful is its natural beauty. Preserving it is of essence if we want to truly maintain our natural quality. Part of this preservation is conducted by UNESCO, United Nations Education, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. UNESCO is a department of the United Nations that has been in operation since 1945. As you can imagine, it dictates what land is to be preserved based on various reasons such as cultural and naturalistic purposes. The Pimachuin Ikai has made the application 3 times and was accepted on its 3rd try, having satisfied all the required criteria. This also comes in part with the help of the provincial governments of Ontario and Manitoba. Both the provincial governments of Manitoba and Ontario have invested into making this project happen, with Manitoba investing over $15 million for 13 years to build up the potential for this project, and Ontario investing a little over $1 million. Many of you are probably thinking, this is a lot of money. And yes, it is. But governments, both the federal and provincial, make investments into cultural projects such as these so that we can promote and maintain the Canadian identity. It is sort of an unwritten rule, except we do have ministries such as the Federal Minister of Canadian Heritage that is purposed to oversee set initiatives. So this is a relevant component to our Canadian society. The significance of this land does go beyond preserving Canada's natural environment, but is rather interrelated with the interests of the Indigenous peoples whose territory resides on this now heritage site. It is important to maintain this traditional territory in honor of Indigenous peoples and recognizing their traditional territory as sacred, as it is currently occupied and used traditionally by indigenous bands in this region. So what I see as the overarching goal is respect all around in terms of respect for the region and its inhabitants, but as well for respect governed by tourism and those who decide to visit the site. So in other words, respect for Canada as the country that it is. As well, to me, this is a victory for Canada as well for Indigenous people in Canada, and I'm more than happy to report on this kind of political news. It demonstrates how we are gradually progressing towards the better good of Indigenous land claims and progressing towards environmental preservation. With Canada Day celebrations that underwent last Sunday, Canada was also expecting this day to mark the day when the United States would be slapped with retaliatory tariffs. The newly enacted tariffs will be applied to American aluminum and steel products, so 25%, as well as a 10% surtax on over 70 of a variety of American consumer goods. Such consumer goods include yogurt, strawberry jam, orange juice. These are among the examples, but the list goes on. This resolves after Canada has endured nearly 1 month with the U.S. applying tariffs to Canadian aluminum, approximately 10%, and steel, 25%, which has already caused some negative consequences, one of which was a steel industry in Sault Ste. Mary, Ontario, having laid off 40 of its employees. A lot of people think that Canada's counter-tariffs are an act of revenge and out of anger, but in reality, it isn't. Canada has imposed these counter-tariffs to offset the impacts of the U.S. tariffs on Canadian exports to the U.S. In other words, Canada has no choice but to apply counter-tariffs in order to save their industries, so it essentially makes things even between the U.S. and Canada. Perhaps one bright side is that Canadian goods will become increasingly competitive, such as Quebec maple syrup over Vermont's maple syrup. This would be in terms of price differences. As well, it is interesting to see how seriously Canadians are taking this trade dispute by boycotting American consumer goods. I myself have begun looking at labels of consumer goods to ensure I am supporting a Canadian industry. This is what I meant when saying that politics affects our everyday lives. It does affect the price of our own groceries and how we choose to shop. To provide some context into what is currently occurring, really this is how countries interact with trade sans trade agreement. Goods take much longer time to cross the border, as there is additional paperwork to be filled out, and tariffs no longer allow a country direct access to another country's markets. So all this being said, it would be easier for trade if the three partner countries remained in this initial NAFTA agreement. I do see some irony in this whole trade predicament, because NAFTA was initially put forward by American President Ronald Reagan, and Canada was the country that was hesitant, unsure how this agreement would affect the Canadian economy, and not wanting any backlash. So it's interesting to see the United States under another Republican president and sees NAFTA as non-beneficial to the American economy when it was first proposed to by a Republican president. I do think there are a lot more relevant issues for North America to look at that doesn't involve the current standing trade agreement between three nations. I think Trump should take example from the G7 and actually take it seriously instead of pouting and leaving early. As developed nations, we should be collaborating together to achieve common universal goals and not combating with each other over petty arguments. To me, this constitutes inefficiency, as there are more appropriate ventures to pursue other than a beneficial trade agreement that has been in effect for 24 years. I go by the philosophy, why fix it if it is not broken? And the sad part about this whole trade ordeal is that it will impact the Canadian economy more than the American economy. According to Adam Taylor, co-founder of Export Action Global, for the provinces of Quebec and Ontario, 50%, so half, of the provincial GDP comes from the United States and its imports of Canadian goods. Conversely, the two states, Michigan and Vermont, that rely heavily on trade with Canada have less than 20% contribute to the state's GDP. All this to demonstrate the bigger picture, and that is that America is still a superpower, and this remains true in terms of wealth. So regardless if America does not benefit from NAFTA as much as the other partners, it still is ahead financially, so it's not hurting from this trade deal. What I do have to say about this is why America doesn't pick on someone its own size. I do agree with Adam Taylor that things will be rocky from now on between the US and Canada. The US president will likely be angered with Canada's retaliatory tariffs because he will find that, as our prime minister said, Canada will not be pushed around. I in no way suggest American citizens themselves wanted these actions, and I would like to underline that this is not a war on Americans, but rather on the person who represents them. That would be the president, because, sadly, America is the voice of a 70-year-old reality star, and we are going to see America act as the headstrong businessman acts on a daily basis, which is acting before thinking and putting its interest above all others. So to conclude, it is unfortunate that one person's actions can affect the lives of millions of North Americans. But that is the reality of the US president. The president holds a lot of power, and any movement can change millions of lives. Thank you for tuning in to another segment of Politics in Action. I hope to see you the next time. I'm Emily at CGMQ 88.9 FM.